We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the UFO show. I'm Ty. He is Dan. This is the Solid Verbal. If you've been listening for a while, or even if you haven't, we do a weird thing on this here college football show every Friday where we make it space themed. Dan, we had a Two's Cruise last year, which was nautically themed. Wanted to shift away from that, like in true Magic School Bus style, and go somewhere new. And so far this season, we've been perusing the galaxy, Daniel, seeing what's out there, the great unknown.
And I don't know if this is too much information, but you've been pushing this for a while, that 2021, you want to do an S&M theme. And I don't think it's fully appropriate for college football. I think we're going to drive off listeners if we fully commit to that bit. But I'm happy to do space, Ty. I really am.
Today, we've got a UFO show that will roll out momentarily. Don't forget, if you don't already subscribe, you can do so at solidverbal.com. Hit us up on social media, all the usual channels. And as every Friday, we do send out our newsletter, which you can also find on our website. Just give us your email in the form and we'll send it out to you on a regular recurring basis. And if you really like the show, if you really want to get your Verballer stripes, go to verballers.com. That's our Patreon. Sign up for either a certified or premium Verballer. You get access to all the fun stuff we're doing, the bonus content, the early access, all the usual stuff that we've been talking about over the last few weeks.
What was our breaking news that was actually breaking news during our preview show? I know it was Tennessee A&M being canceled. Did we also announce LSU, Alabama? Was that us who broke that story?
I think it was us. We had our pipeline, of course, into Ed Orgeron. Obviously. No, I think it was, you know, of course, we forget whatever we say the second it comes out.
Of course.
I think it was the Alabama-LSU game that broke.
And subsequently, Maryland-Ohio State has been canceled.
Georgia-Mizzou is also off.
Georgia-Mizzou, right, yeah.
The running joke in the Solid Verbal Slack is that this could maybe be the last week of the college football season at our current rate.
This is, okay, so I hope it's not, and it doesn't look like it will be, but when I see people talking about like, well, how do you reschedule the playoff? How do you push it back? Because then you run into NFL issues. I'm like, guys, that's not the point of 2020. I would argue it's not the point of any year, but especially 2020. Like, what do we, this is not, we're worrying about mid-November. So, yeah, it definitely a different type of week, and hope everybody is asymptomatic and comes back without any issues. But more SEC games canceled or off or postponed than not. It's not a great look. I saw, this is the quote I saw, the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is shaken, but not deterred.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Look at that.
That's a quote. So that was, he was deep in, "I'm certainly shaken," Sankey said of recent developments, "but not deterred."
Do you think he had that planned, or is that something that he uses on the regular?
Definitely on the regular.
Yeah.
At this point, you have your go-tos. Like,
you can't just pull that out for the first time. In his,
if
media
he has
quote.
A 15-year-old who failed an AP bio test, he's shaken, but he's not deterred.
That's really good. That's really good. The SEC, the state of the SEC at the moment is not really good. We've got four postponements, as you said: Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Georgia, Mizzou, and Auburn, Mississippi State. That, of course, is in addition to Ohio State, Maryland. Also, we had Memphis and Navy, UL Monroe, and Arkansas State. And Arkansas, I almost said Arkansas. Air Force, Wyoming, yeah, has been straight up canceled. So a bunch of games here that have been affected by COVID this week. Who knows if there will be more by the time Saturday rolls around. But hopefully, as of now, knock on wood, fingers crossed, that's the extent of it.
I saw Notre Dame football was not affected by the crowd rushing, according to Brian Kelly. I don't know about the Notre Dame student population at large. I'm hopeful that's the case as well for them. Other just health-related news, I'm sure you saw Journey Brown officially retired from football.
Huge bummer.
Because of myocarditis.
Huge bummer.
Not related to COVID, but I believe in the screening and the scanning, it was an undetected discovery for Journey Brown. So yeah, huge bummer, but he should live a normal life. You know, when you're able to discover something like that, that you're able to treat and adjust accordingly. But yeah, I'm saddened by that.
Yeah, you're right. And it wasn't COVID related, but because of COVID testing, that's how they found it.
Right.
The other thing that I saw is that Miles Brennan, unlikely to return this season for LSU. So he started, I think, the first three games of the year. He's been out with kind of an abdominal slash hip injury that has caused him to miss some time. And it seems as if it may require surgery. They're saying he may be done for the season. So adding more complexity to an already disappointing LSU season. Again, a lot of new faces coming off of that campaign last year. So it wasn't entirely unexpected to see a bit of a step back, but with all the turnover, now it's some injuries, and obviously the defense is grossly underperformed. Mm-hmm. Just not going in a great direction for LSU.
No. I did see that Urban Meyer was the one, or at least one of the ones on that Fox set who was diagnosed with COVID-19. I saw seeing that he is recovering, so that's good.
Okay,
I don't like
good.
People sick from COVID. And I saw this, I believe it was on the college football subreddit, that if Ohio State, Indiana is canceled next week. Now, I believe Ohio State, Maryland's cancellation was due to a Maryland situation, not an Ohio State one. But if Ohio State, Indiana is canceled, Indiana is in the driver's seat to win the Big Ten East, because they'd have one fewer cancellation if Indiana, Michigan State moves forward.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh, because it's obviously a serious situation, but there is a component to this season across the board that feels like whatever you can get is falling off the back of a truck.
Correct. If Indiana goes undefeated, which I suppose would include wins over Michigan, Penn State, Purdue, currently undefeated Purdue, Old Oak and Bucket. If Indiana goes undefeated with more wins and is thus qualified to go to the Big Ten championship game ahead of Ohio State and wins the Big Ten, goes undefeated and wins the Big Ten, and is just very clearly going to be left out of the playoff in favor of Ohio State. Woo! Have fun with your playoff, everybody. Have fun with that.
All right. That does it for news. Should we get to our game this evening?
Yeah, I'm calling it the Unclustered, but if you can come up with a better name, I'm happy to oblige.
No, I think Unclustered is perfect, actually.
Let's do that.
Unclustered. Sounds. The Unclustered Friday Orbit. Today, Dan, we're going to be talking about things called globular clusters, are we not?
We are. A globular cluster, per our good friends at Wikipedia, a spherical collection of stars that orbits a galactic core. What's a galactic core? Unclear to me at this point. I'm only going to deep dive into a Wikipedia black hole for so long.
A black hole, some sort of other celestial body?
Rotational center of the Milky Way galaxy. So whatever point that is, if the stars that are gathered around there, they're very tightly bound by gravity, which gives them a spherical shape and relatively high stellar density towards the center of the cluster. So that just looks like a big grouping. I'm a fan of clusters, non-COVID era clusters of all kinds, Ty. You got a cluster of like peanut butter and chocolate and peanuts and that's a, love a good chocolate cluster there. Love the term cluster F. That's a great one.
Well, I was going to say, cluster F could be something we use like synonymously with some of these groupings that we've got this evening.
Correct. And so what we are doing to uncluster, and by the way, our dear, dear friend, Chaz Messier, who we've talked about galaxies named after. See, I just rolled into that smoothly, Ty.
You did it. It was
I committed
almost,
to your bit.
You committed to the bit. It was muscle memory. I'm proud of you.
Chaz Messier. Well, we'll get to him later, just like we got to our most interesting human of the 20th century last week near the end of the show. Chaz Messier, fascinating dude when it comes to the modern French fathers of astronomy. But what we're doing to uncluster is we're looking at the ACC, Big 12, Big 10, and SEC, just because the clarity of cluster in the Pac-12 has not yet revealed itself. But we are looking at five teams that look to be clustered in the middle class of each of these conferences. And this is not, we've discussed pluckiness factors for certain teams around the country. I want to sort out these five teams from each of these conferences, these increasingly large conferences outside of the Big 12, I guess, and say, okay, which star in the cluster is moving in a positive direction? Which is ascending? Which star is perhaps on the verge of imploding? Mm. A nova, supernova, whatever.
So
I want to look at these teams. We can start with whatever conference you'd like. Obviously, the Big Ten has not played as many games as the other three conferences we're going to talk about, but we're starting to see everybody beating themselves up in the middle class. And it is our job, it is our duty to honor Chaz Messier, once nicknamed the Comet Ferret.
The Comet Ferret?
Because he was discovering the Comet Ferret, because he would ferret out comets. He discovered so many comets that the French leadership, the Royal French whatever, nicknamed him the Comet Ferret.
The Comet Ferret.
He also crossed over with Halley of Halley's Comet, Edmund Halley. So that's a nice little, like, you like your Forrest Gump comparison.
Right. Edmund Halley,
so,
I believe.
Edmund Halley. Is it? I thought it was Halley's Comet.
Halley's Comet, Dan.
I don't know.
Come on.
Well, we'll have to get a ruling from dear friend of the show, John. What conference would you like to start in to uncluster?
Well, so we're talking about the middle class of these conferences, right? Or what we deem as the
middle
class.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of 2-3s and 3-2s records within the conference. Yeah.
The Big 12 to me is the most interesting one because it almost feels like everything's the middle class in the Big 12. Even Oklahoma State, which is currently like at the top. Even Iowa State, like there feels like there's a lot of clustering.
There's no separation per se
within the Big 12. There's not like a Clemson and Notre Dame situation where there are two teams in conference that feel like they're way above the others.
I'd say I'd remove Oklahoma, but they've lost to two of these teams. So why would you remove Oklahoma? The teams that have two or three losses, at least with Iowa State and Oklahoma State, at least separating themselves in record, are Kansas State, Oklahoma, Texas, West Virginia, TCU, who've all sort of beaten each other up.
Looking at that list, I feel like K-State is holding steady, treading water, and I don't think they could really be the answer to the proverbial star, proverbial whatever, moving in the wrong direction. Because we thought this was going to be a major step back year, and they've already exceeded expectations.
Right.
Oklahoma, I feel, is getting better. It just took them a little bit to get rolling. There are still deficiencies there.
By the way, when a star implodes, that is a black hole, for sure.
I don't think it always forms a black hole. I think sometimes it's just a dwarf.
Ty, I've been on Wikipedia for literally 3.5 minutes. How dare you question me?
Regardless.
Yeah.
I think it took Oklahoma a little bit to get rolling, but I think they're fine. Texas, you know, disappointing maybe, but still having an okay season. West Virginia feels like they're going in the right direction. The one here that jumps out to me, as I'm not really sure what direction they're headed, is TCU.
Right.
And it's been that way for a couple years running now.
I'm inclined to go TCU for the implode, though you can talk me into Texas. You can talk me into, you're seeing rumors about Tom Herman's job security. We have seen, certainly Sam Ellinger has not gone in the direction that I think we felt he would after his first couple years at Texas, certainly after that Georgia win in the Sugar Bowl. West Virginia seems like they're ascending. Oklahoma is at least ascending, if not maintaining. Kansas State's hard to judge, but they feel like they're maintaining a little bit, even without their starting quarterback. I'm actually going to say Texas is the one. Maybe I'm too close because I've already opted out of Texas football. So I'm going to stay consistent and say Texas is the one separating itself, given the context of Texas, even though they've won games. I'm going to say, For where Texas should be shooting through the sky, I think they're the ones going in the clear wrong direction.
Interesting. Okay. I think
TCU
I disagree
is just
with
sort
you.
Of just seems like where TCU has been. I don't know.
No, I think the answer is TCU for me. I'm maybe a little too close to that situation as well, but I just feel like we're constantly in the state of feeling pretty good about the defense, not fully knowing what they've got on offense. We're really excited about Max Duggan coming in. Obviously, he had some of his own issues to deal with before he could get out on the field. But the offense, again, just kind of just leaving too much meat on the bone, man. Like, I don't know what to get out of what they're going to get out of this rushing attack this season. It's really left a lot to be desired. And like some of the pieces out wide, but there's just not enough of a well-rounded nature to this thing to make me feel good about it. Like, it's going in a good direction.
Well, I can tell you that TCU did beat Texas a little over a month ago. If that changes your perspective at all.
I know.
In Austin. Yeah.
Never let the facts in the way of a good story. You know that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Next conference, who do you want to uncluster?
Let's go ACC. I mentioned ACC.
All right, this one's a toughie.
We've got Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Boston College, NC State, and Pitt as our five teams. So to your point here on the document, we could talk about who feels like they're going in a good direction, who feels like they're going in a bad direction. It doesn't have to always be in a negative direction. So of those teams, I would say the one that feels like it's going like relative to its former self BC is the team that feels like it's most going in a really good direction. I think Virginia Tech's fine. I think Wake has had a pretty good season, all things considered.
Wake just sort of looks like Wake, though. Yeah.
But BC, to me, has been the one that has raised eyebrows because new coach, new quarterback, still not without their issues. But all told, I think it's been a really good first season for Jeff Hafley.
One of the things I did, and I think most of these teams, if not all of these teams, are guilty, is when I looked at the SEC, if you've been uncomfortably beaten down by two teams, it's hard to consider you as a middle-class team. Now, for instance, NC State has lost three games, but they really only lost comfortably to Virginia Tech and to North Carolina, but it was close against Miami, so I'm giving them bonus points for that. The rest of the teams there in that list, I think I'm going to agree with you with BC. The Pitt loss to Notre Dame has me, relative to some of the talent on hand, thinking that Pitt's the team. Oh God, but NC State has Tim Beck on staff. But I also don't like Pitt's offensive coaching staff. I think Virginia Tech is squarely there. Wake Forest is squarely still clustered. I'm going to say Boston College ascending, NC State hanging on, and Pitt is the one sort of floating away right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Pitt.
Yeah. Has Pitt played NC State yet? That's the million-dollar question.
Well, we played this game.
It's impossible. Pitt lost by 1 point to NC State October 3rd.
30-29.
I don't know, but see, okay, so now in retrospect, now that we've looked at this game, Pitt has lost 3 of 4 since that game, including just an absolute destruction at the hands of Notre Dame, and comfortably beat Florida State, which is a really nice bounce back. Do you think Pitt and NC State being essentially in a very similar place, do you think that is more of a commentary on where Pitt is at or on where NC State is at?
I think it's probably more of a commentary about Pitt.
Okay. You know. I think that's probably right because of the depths to which NC State fell last year and is trying to dig itself out of. But yeah.
This is a really tough game. This might be the toughest game we've ever played. I'm really struggling with this.
Okay. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to the SEC.
Okay, let's.
SEC, so, we've got Auburn, mm-hmm. Arkansas, Ole Miss, Missouri, and Kentucky. I see two possible answers here for teams floating off in a bad direction.
Okay.
It's not Arkansas, it's not Ole Miss, and it's not Mizzou, because all three of those teams have new coaches, to some extent have overperformed. All three, I think, have a lot of enthusiasm about the program, even if they're not necessarily racking up the wins. The two obvious ones here to me are both Auburn and Kentucky, and they sort of come at this from different sides of the same coin here. We've got Kentucky with a sound defense, an offense that leaves an absolute ton to be desired, heavily focused on the ground attack, not really getting a whole lot through the air, and I expected a better season out of the Wildcats this year. Tough schedule, as always in the SEC, but I expected more out of them. And you'll recall me saying on the SEC preview, they're the team that I was most interested in the entire SEC, Kentucky.
By the way, one might argue, just in terms of Kentucky's trajectory, that they had their maybe clear best offensive season in the last, I don't know, decade, when fielding a quarterback who didn't even try to throw the ball last year in Lynn Bowden. Right now, they're 108th in points per drive nationally.
Wow. Okay. On the other side, though, is Auburn. And this one is a running joke in the college football world. Auburn is ever the enigma. Just when you think Auburn's down and out, they play pretty well. When you think they've got it together, they stink. And sometimes that's week to week. Sometimes that's season to season. It hasn't followed a normal pattern under Gus Malzahn. So now we're at this place with the Auburn Tigers where, look, I mean, I, again, expected a lot more out of them. In the early part of the season, we saw, what, a win over Kentucky in week one. That, to me, was like a huge deal. Wow, Kentucky. I thought Kentucky had a legit shot of knocking off Auburn. Didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty close for a while.
Next week, they go to Georgia. They score 6 points. Not even close. A week later, almost lose to Arkansas. Could have lost to Arkansas.
Should have.
A week later, a one-score game that they lose at the hands of South Carolina.
Hasn't aged well. Has not aged well.
A week later, a game against Ole Miss that they win by a touchdown. Close game. Close game on the road.
Was not a great ending to that one either.
And then at the end of October, they destroy LSU, which probably doesn't look as good even 2 weeks later as it did back then. So it's been a really goofy season for Auburn. It's been a goofy run here for Gus Malzahn. And the question is not just about where do they stand relative to that pack, but it's truly, where does this program go from here? Where are we at? Does Gus Malzahn have a future? It's a more complex question just than like, where do they stand relative to these five teams? But for me, I think they're the obvious answer here.
There are also two calls at the end of a game, at the end of two games, from being, 2-4?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, yeah, as fortuitous as the season has been for them at the end of games, they're 4-2. They have the opportunity to move to 6-2 against Mississippi State and Tennessee before a really tough end of their schedule at Alabama in the Iron Bowl, and then that post-rivalry week matchup against A&M, which they are projected to lose to, projected to lose to. So I think for me, especially with the questions on offense about consistency against teams that they are similarly talented as, I think it is Auburn moving in the wrong direction, though. You're right. You can talk me into Kentucky because Kentucky has sort of stayed in this offensive place. Kentucky has consistently won, I guess, aside from last year when they went to Lynn Bowden Jr. When they've won, it's been relatively low scoring. It's been relying on controlling the ball, controlling the clock, and letting their defense do the rest. Whereas I think in terms of activity, there is more bubbling in a downward direction for Auburn. So I think I agree with you there.
Final conference that we've got here.
Because that South Carolina loss.
I know. Final conference we got here is the Big Ten. And the Big Ten's a tough one because the Big Ten has played that many games. But I think we're in a position to talk about these. Maryland, Rutgers, Michigan State, Michigan, and Iowa. I think you got to prune off Maryland and Rutgers from this game. Both are. Rutgers has been more competitive.
I like the bar of Rutgers where it's just like, win a Big Ten game and you're good for us on a trajectory upwards.
Well, great. But okay. It feels like they're a little bit more competitive, especially on defense.
Indiana was pretty close for a chunk. You're right.
They're at least better than they've been. So it's hard to be worse, right? It's hard to be worse. So by default, they're a little bit better. Yeah. Maryland, I don't know what to make of Maryland. I have no idea what to make of Maryland. I'm inclined to just leave them off this list as well because Talia Tungavailoa looks pretty good.
They've won multiple games in a row. They are on a winning streak, Ty. That is a perfect shooting star direction.
Maryland's off this list. So that leaves us with Michigan State, Michigan, and Iowa, Dan.
Right.
You have any thoughts, any hot takes?
Well, Michigan State beat Michigan, so it's hard to argue that Michigan State is free-falling to a more dramatic degree than Michigan. Michigan State than Michigan. Iowa losing to Purdue and Northwestern suddenly look a little bit more respectable, though the lows of Iowa on offense don't seem to be indicating going in any sort of interesting direction. Michigan State is hard to judge because they just hired a new coach and they also beat their rival at home. I think I'm inclined to say Michigan's on free fall and the team ascending most dramatically is Maryland.
I think I could get behind that. I have real problems with the question of who is ascending most rapidly.
But who, like, of these teams, right? Is Iowa, so they finished their season scoring a ton of points against USC, but also didn't do much on offense last year with a very experienced Nate Stanley at quarterback.
Right.
And a very good defense on the other side, giving them good field position. Michigan had stretches last year of impressive offense, but still, I assume it was an underwhelming effort in terms of what Michigan fans looked at Josh Gattis's first season as, and looked to be improved against Minnesota, but we can now rule on that as slightly different than we thought of it early on. Maryland scored a ton of points against Minnesota, which is what Michigan did, won in wonky fashion, and beat a Penn State team that is certainly very disappointing, but they have less talent than Penn State. The expectations for Maryland relative to Penn State were certainly lesser, given what both teams have on hand and the experience of both of those coaching staffs. So I can't imagine whatever Maryland finishes, they might lose the rest of their games. They might look terrible. But Michigan losing the way that they have, and Maryland, yes, getting killed by Northwestern is not amazing, but relative to the context of both of these rosters and situations, I think Maryland's the ascending team. I don't know. I mean, what case are you making that it's not Maryland?
I just have a hard time saying it is, because my read on them preseason, which feels like an eternity ago, was that they were going to be dreadful.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe it's the competition. I don't know. But they have not looked dreadful. The offense has been pretty potent, even if the defense has been, you know, sort of all over the place. And seems like they did find a quarterback. So it's...
If Maryland... Here, I'll ask you this. I'll phrase it this
way. Go ahead.
If Maryland can score 27 points against the rest of their schedule, who of these teams can they beat? Ohio State?
No.
Gonna say no. Michigan State?
Yes.
I think they can beat Michigan State. If they score 27 points, can they beat Indiana?
I don't think so, but that's...
I think probably not, but it's in Bloomington.
Right.
Michigan.
Ooh, probably.
27 has beaten Michigan this year.
Yeah. Probably.
Another one of these... That was... Yeah, they lost to Michigan State 27-24, 38-21 to Indiana. I think with what Michigan's defense looks like right now, and you're able to correct things, you're able to tweak things, you're able to overhaul things to whatever degree during a season, and that game is in Ann Arbor, I think it's possible. I think it can happen for maybe 3.6 out of 10 times with what Michigan's, how sloppy Michigan's defense, then Rutgers.
Definitely.
And I guess the only other case would be like Michigan State for beating Michigan, but they lost to Rutgers. They lost to another one of these teams, and they looked pretty ugly in losing to another one of these teams in Iowa, so it's not them. Iowa just feels like they're standing pat, so I don't know. I think that leaves us by default at Maryland.
Yeah, I think you're right. Again, that falling off the back of a truck-ness part of the season, it's probably Maryland.
I can't stress enough that Maryland lost by 40 points to Northwestern and still feels like the default correct answer among these five. Just from the depths of where they were last year, I think that you have to consider that.
Do we have any other conferences here? I think these are the four main ones.
These are the four. Do you have any thought? Do you have any Pac-12 thoughts about, like, just in general, not necessarily fully related to what we saw from the conference last week, especially since we didn't see four teams play?
Right.
But do you have any thoughts about teams that you feel certain are ascending, are in the midst of ascending based on offseason, based on last season, based on the last couple seasons, and a team or two that is descending, or that you just like, oh, this team's standing pat?
I have a team that I'm not at all confident in, but
okay.
I'd like to muse over the potential that they are ascending, and that's Arizona State. So
okay.
ASU, you'll remember, go back a couple years, they hire Herm Edwards. It's a weird presser. It's a weird hire, frankly.
Sure.
And he comes in, he's going to do weird things and restructure the football program. And we all thought jokingly it was going to be a disaster. It's not been a disaster. It really hasn't. I think Herm's done a good job.
No.
And as we saw a week ago, like, Jaden Daniels wasn't great as a thrower, but as a runner, he was really good. They had some, I just thought, bright spots on offense running the football against USC.
They legitimately have a quarterback of the future they can build around, which is not a thing a lot of teams can say.
So it feels like that component on offense has come along okay. And, you know, I'm intrigued to get your thoughts as sort of like our Pac-12 guru here as to which direction that program's headed. Because if anything, in 2020, I would have expected by now, if, you know, previous assumptions were true, for them to be the team floating off in the wrong direction. But if anything, it feels like ASU is trending ever so gradually in a good spot, if only because of Jaden Daniels, and it seems like, you know, there's been relative stability there for two seasons running.
I don't even think it's just Jaden Daniels. They ran well last week against USC across the board. I know they brought in a JC running back. They lose Frank Darby early on in that game, who's supposed to be their go-to receiver, and I think it's LBS, LaVon Bunkley Shelton. He stepped up, I mean, in as much as anybody can in a down passing game. Rashad White out of the backfield was good. They have guys on defense. Chase Lucas feels like he's been making plays there for a while. So based on, one, what ASU has shown on the field, two, what they're doing on the recruiting trail, they've recruited really well. They've hired some younger coaches, especially with Southern California connections, to perhaps pick off some guys that otherwise would have gone to, you know, high three stars, four stars, maybe they'd have gone to UCLA or something like that. And the fact remains, you look at the rest of that division, Utah doesn't seem like they're going in any direction, because it feels like we just watch the same Utah team every year, a really strong defense with solid, if not efficient, offenses that don't fully perform near the end of the year. And then Colorado and UCLA are at best holding steady and in a not so good place. So relative to what surrounds them, I think, yeah, ASU is definitely moving in the right direction.
Arizona, if we stay in the state of Arizona, the Wildcats didn't play last week. They're scheduled to play this week against USC. I feel like this is a program that's been going in the wrong direction for a while now. And the move to bring in Kevin Sumlin hasn't really changed much of anything. It's kind of more the same in Tucson. If you look at their projected win probabilities for their remaining five games, we've got a loss against USC, a loss against Washington, a loss at UCLA, a loss at home against Colorado, and then another loss at home to close out the year against Arizona State. So at least the efficiency metrics are not feeling great about Arizona. Excuse me. It stands to reason, again, there's no body of work to go off. This is just based on a number of preseason factors, at least to the best of, you know, anyone's ability. But wow, it's not saying much for at least where the computers feel the state of the Arizona program is at.
I'm fascinated, because I think you're right, but I'm fascinated by Washington right now. With a new coach, new offensive coordinator, a wide open, at the time we're recording this on Thursday afternoon Eastern time, a wide open quarterback race, who I haven't seen who necessarily has the edge there. And in Jimmy Lake's first year and first class that he's putting together, it's not his technical first full class. That'll be next year's class. But it seems like they've taken a step down recruiting wise and have ceded a good amount of ground to Oregon on the recruiting trail. And obviously on the field, losing the last couple to the Ducks after looking really strong against Oregon during those years with Chris Peterson, those 2 years, one of which they went to the playoff and scored 70 in the process at Autzen. I don't know if that means they're heading in the wrong direction, but I don't think anybody has a really solid read on where Washington is right now, with so much new on offense, with the new coaching staff. And it doesn't feel, I felt like Washington was going to get more buzz under Jimmy Lake. Like, he was going to be doing things differently enough that people were going to be like, oh, you got to watch these guys and this guy and that guy. And I don't know. It feels pretty quiet from a Husky perspective. So one of the more fascinating teams, just because there seems to be so many unknowns. So I'm hopeful they go in an upward direction. I don't know beyond the secondary that there is a clear indicator that they are. So we'll see. That to me is fascinating in the Pac-12 anyway. You want to talk about Chaz Messier before we let the good
people
go?
Please talk to me about Chaz Messier, please.
Okay.
I was hoping you'd get to this.
By the way, Chaz Messier, I looked up to confirm whether or not he was the father of modern French astronomy. Jean Picard.
Oh.
Ty.
Okay.
You might recognize that name from, I guess, Star Trek, but he came a couple centuries before then. But Charles Messier does a lot of his work in the 1700s. He's, you know, elected to the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. He's in all sorts of places. He discovers 13 comets, Ty.
Comet hunter. Yeah.
He is the comet hunter, the comet ferret. He lived to be 80 something years old, which is incredible in the 18th and 19th century
86?
To live that long. 86 years old. And then this was my favorite thing. Did you see the thing I sent you about the Messier Marathon? Did you see that? I sent it to you. I sent you a message about the Messier Marathon.
Yes.
The Messier Marathon has become somewhat of a rite of passage for amateur astronomers around the world. The goal of it is to see how many of the 100 objects can be, of the 100 objects can be located and viewed in a single night. The Messier catalog is considered by many to contain the best deep sky objects visible in the Northern Hemisphere.
Wow.
It reminds me of the scene in The Social Network where they had like the code off. Like, oh, damn, Messier Marathon time. And that's what budding astronomers do when they go nuts.
There was a movie with Steve Martin and Jack Black called The Big Year.
Okay.
Where they try to see how many birds they could see in like a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whole thing. Apparently it's a real thing. It reminds me of that.
Okay. I like that. The objects, you got M1 through M110.
Oh, I love M93.
Is that real? Is that true?
I don't know.
This guy accomplished the ferret tie. He was in the French Navy. This guy accomplished. I want to read more about Chaz Messier. This kind of thing does it for me. People that just accomplish a ton that are the modern father of something. I don't know what chance we have to become the modern fathers of something. Let's take a moment. Are we the modern fathers of college football podcasting?
I guess we would be.
Based on more time than content or both?
Correct, on both fronts. Yeah.
I remember in the bleachers, Michael Felder was podcasting real early on, right?
He was one of the first, yeah. I'm trying to think which other ones were out there. We started this show in 2008.
Yeah.
And there were a couple shows that came around. I remember Michael. Michael was one of our first guests on the show.
Yeah.
So I think you're right about that.
I think that's right. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. I don't think it's anything to brag about.
No,
I just
not
think
at
it's
all.
A point of fact.
No.
We were just dumb enough to start doing this early on, and I don't think we ever put a guest on speakerphone. So that's the feather in our cap. That's all I have, Ty. Unclustered.
Particularly crowded regions of the sky, namely the Virgo cluster and the Milky Way's galactic center, can prove to be challenging to an observer as well, and a Messier marathon will generally budget time for those regions accordingly.
Wow.
Just FYI. FYI, in case you're wondering how they handle the Virgo cluster.
He's got a crater on the moon. The lunar crater Messier and the asteroid 7359 Messier were named in his honor.
See, having a crater named after you on the moon, it's like...
That's big time. That's huge.
That's the cardboard cutout in the empty stadium on mega ultra steroids right there.
Chaz's interest in astronomy was stimulated by the appearance of the great six-tailed comet of 1744.
Six tails?
I'm looking at it right now, and it looks rad as hell. Wow. Yeah, somebody painted it in the mid-18th century.
That looks Chaz like Messier, it's biblical. Ty. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this has been something. SolidVerbal.com is the website. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Going out to Verballers.com if you want to check out what we offer on the Patreon. Got all sorts of excitement coming up there. And of course, give us a call at 408-VERBAL-1. It is a weird week of college football games, given circumstances. But as always, we're going to get your calls. We're going to mash them together. We're going to put them into a spot we like to call the reverbs. It's the hit. Everybody listens for it. And we do too. We have a lot of fun putting these together and having a chance to interact with folks each and every week. So give us a call, 408-VERBAL1, 408-837-2251. Dan?
I'm always fascinated. I'm still on Messier. I'm always fascinated by somebody in like the 1700s or 1800s that modern medicine seems like a nightmare, right? You're talking about leeches and bloodletting and no knowledge of the human body in any sort of meaningful way. And the towns are dirty and there's no irrigation places and running water. All these things are just, it feels so primitive.
And they're throwing poop on the streets out the window. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And then Chaz Messier is drawing the Orion Nebula. Like the fascination I have is with certain people who are just like doing great things with seemingly, again, primitive things happening all around them. I'm struggling to make a college football comparison to that. I'm sure somebody listening can, but that's my goal right now, is to think about who is doing advanced things while everybody else around them is just like, I don't know, what if we have fish suck out our blood? Something like that. That I love.
It does look French accent. It does look as if that was beautiful. Thank you. It does look as if the Hubble Space Telescope also captured a comet with six tails.
Damn, see?
In 2013, yeah.
It's a thing. All right, we got to stop talking about Messier, at least into microphones. We can carry this on into like the Discord chat.
Discord chat or Bruinet, which we're going to take care of right now.
Oh, that's true.
Available to Patreon subscribers. Look, everyone out there, have a happy, have a safe, have a fun weekend. Watch that college football. Give us a holler. Again, 408-VERBAL1. Hit us up on social. Drop us an email, solidverbal@gmail.com. We will be back this weekend to recap all the action that was. In the meantime, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. Talk to y'all soon. Stay solid.
Peace.